We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Taking a look at today's top story, trend, or topic as John and Hugh kick off their final hour with The Big Story.
You already know!
On John and Hugh, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Falcons and Steelers, final game before the Falcons finally get to their bye week and get maybe a little bit healed up and a little bit rested for the last four games of the regular season. Pretty much a pick 'em game between these two as Kenny Pickett and the Steelers come to town after a Monday night game win over the Indianapolis Colts. Today, big day, of course, practice day, and we find out more about the injuries on both sides of the ball. The Steelers have their own injury issues. Be watching the wires on players like Najee Harris and Minkah Fitzpatrick. Let's get to you to Joe Patrick, who, of course, covers our lead reporter for the Atlanta Falcons, and he joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. And, of course, Joe, we got a lot to talk about, don't we? Hey, Joe.
Yeah, we do. Good morning, guys. And, hey, Hugh, congratulations once again. This is the first time I've talked to you since your induction this weekend. So I just wanted to give you another shout-out. Legend, man. So, yeah, I'm going to be on this morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. But what do you think about, Joe, what do you think about the decision for them to throw the ball and not run the ball inside the five last week against the Commodores?
Yeah, so I was putting it out on Twitter when it happened that I would defend the play call forever, and I still do. I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand the idea of running the ball, and I'm not against running the ball in that situation either. And the arguments that are made for running the ball make total sense to me. It's your identity, you can do some clock management, you've had success in the game running the ball. All those things are absolutely true. I would say the one argument I would make about the team having had success running the ball in the game and that being the reason why, I do think it's a different story when you're trying to run the ball inside that kind of goal, inside the 5-yard line goal to go situation. We just saw the Falcons run the ball the previous play and they lost 2 yards. Now I know it was a bit of a broken play, but you know, there's every chance that could happen again, or you aren't necessarily going to be successful again. I do understand though, that if you are not successful on that run play, then you're at least able to manage the clock, get that down, and set yourself up. But my whole point of view on this is that the Falcons offense in that situation with 3 downs to get the go ahead score, the Falcons offense is not good enough to not seriously be threatening the goal line in each one of those opportunities. And I think when Arthur Smith spoke on his Monday press conference, he basically said that he was, you know, I'm paraphrasing him here, but that he was, you know, just prioritizing getting in the end zone above all else. And I'm not saying that you got to pass it and not run it or something like that. Like I would have been the worst play possible there would be like a corner fade or something that's low percentage, a pass that could stop the clock. But I think that when you look at the play that was called, yeah, it was a pass play, but it was kind of a, you know, it was a mesh route within the underneath to Cordarrelle Patterson. And he was open. Like he was going to score a touchdown almost certainly on that play if, you know, that pass does not get tipped at the line, which is ultimately a good play by Deron Payne. That's not something that you can really totally, you know, as an offensive player, completely nullify. Yeah, maybe Mariota could have, you know, been more selective with the passing lane and whatnot. But I just thought that if you wanted to dissect that game and try to determine why the Falcons lost, I just really think that looking at that particular play as the reason for it is kind of not seeing the whole picture of what happened in the game.
Joe Patrick covers the Falcons for us today. Big day here. It's another big game here because you can't lose, you know, contact with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're playing a team in Pittsburgh that has its own struggles with a rookie quarterback in a game that, frankly, you're at home. You should win, Joe, and have that kind of good taste going into your mouth going into the bye week, which would set you up for a potential. Look, we talked about it earlier this morning. It's not out of the question, 50-50 maybe shot here, that Week 18 game against Tom Brady at Mercedes-Benz Stadium might be for the division title. And if it is,
no doubt.
If it is, it's good. This town's going to be lit, no matter what the records are. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, this season is kind of shaping up where you could have a normal 17-game season then with a playoff game in Week 18 against the Buccaneers. I mean, that's what that game could very well potentially be, because neither team would be making the playoffs, the actual playoffs, if they don't win that game. It could very well be a play your way in type situation there. And I think that this is a very interesting game coming up. You know, obviously it's one the Falcons, you said they should win, they have to win it. Like, if they want their season to come down to that Buccaneers game, you look at what they've got left. They almost certainly have to win this one and beat the Saints coming off the bye. But, you know, those are – because those are your winnable games, basically, from here on out. The ones that you can realistically say, we go into this one with the feeling that we should be winning or have a very legitimate chance to win. I would say, I mean, the Steelers have been kind of – I don't know if sneaky good is the right way to phrase how they've been playing, but they have not been playing – you know, they've not been getting blown out like they kind of were earlier on in the season. If you look after the Buffalo game on October 9th, they beat the Bucs. They lost at Miami, a really good Miami team this year, by only 6 points. Kind of got their doors blown off by Philadelphia on the road, but then beat the Saints, only lost the Bengals by 7, and then obviously win against the Colts on Monday. So, you know, this is a team that I think is building a little bit of momentum, and so I think the onus is on the Falcons to, you know, really get to Kenny Pickett, a rookie quarterback, disturb him as much as you can, and just, you know, do those things that NFL defenses can do that, you know, these rookie quarterbacks really can kind of get in their head in terms of the pressure you can potentially get on them, throwing all kinds of different looks and disguises at them to try to force him into mistakes. And you know, the Falcons defense has really thrived this season when they've been able to force those turnovers. And this feels like one of those games where they may be able to get back and do that a little bit more.
How impressed were you that the Falcons were able to run the ball against the Commodores?
Oh, man, that was probably the most surprising thing about that game. And just a huge testament to all those guys up front. If you look at Chris Lindstrom's grade, I think he had the highest PFF grade among offensive linemen this week, almost perfect. And it's really unfortunate that he happened to be the guy who was blocking Deron Payne on that last play that got tipped. Not a ton, I guess, you can do there. I don't know the finer intricacies of, like, trying to keep a defensive lineman's hands down in that situation. But, yeah, I mean, the way they were able to run the ball was really, really surprising. And I think that, you know, when we have that conversation about that that final play, you know, that's one of the reasons why I thought you were surprisingly good on the ground in that game. And so I think it's a huge testament, because I certainly thought that they were going to have their struggles, especially on that interior where we've seen, you know, Drew Dahlman struggle at times. And at left guard, you know, there's been a revolving door there. Colby Gossett obviously in this one, and he definitely handled his own against two of the best interior defensive linemen in this league, especially two that happen to be on the same team in Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne. So huge credit to them, and it really has to give you belief that this team can get back to its kind of bread and butter and what it's done all season long and try to bounce back with a win against the Steelers and, you know, just keep pounding that ground game. It seems like this team is one of those ones that can just churn out near 200 yards in pretty much, you know, a lot of games that they play. And if that's the way that this team has to win, right? They've got to win on the ground. If Marcus Mariota is driving back 25, 30 times in a game, that's not good for this team. You want Marcus Mariota throwing less than 20 times. If he does that, this team tends to win football games.
Joe Patrick covers the Falcons for us. Of course, big practice day Wednesday day out in Flowery Branch ahead of the Steelers game on Sunday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Joe, even the head coach said yesterday, it's crazy that they're still alive in this thing, and they very much have game out. I mean, he used the term, he said, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's wild. I mean.
I know. It's almost like Arthur Smith tries to keep his emotions and stuff under wraps when he's talking to media. And that, I remember when he said that, it's almost like he like let it slip. Like, man, I cannot believe that. I mean, it is wild. And there was a report, I think I heard on the Falcons podcast, that there was Falcons players kind of huddled around a cell phone in the locker room after the game, there in Washington, watching the end of that Buccaneers game against the Browns. And, it is one of those crazy years, but hey, it makes it more fun for us fans to, be in contention, even though we kind of understand that this is still a rebuild, no doubt. I mean, right now this team has more dead cap than it has had playing for it on the field now that you've got some of these key injuries to certain players. So it's amazing. And I think for that reason alone, you have to be a little bit proud of, you know, just the way that this team has been able to hang in there. Obviously the record means that they shouldn't necessarily be in it, but hey, they've got, you know, what's the poker analogy? A chip and a chair. So you'll take that at this time of year.
Is there any indication from the team? And of course we'll get the injury reports, but has there been any indication, or at least, maybe they're hopeful that we could see Kyle Pitts come back at some point?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're not going to say anything about it, but he is. I think they have that. They're keeping that option open. Let's put it that right now. I think just a lot of it depends on how a guy heals up after a surgery. Some people have, you know, genetics or whatever it is that allows them to just kind of come back and be better, ready to go. I know Arthur Smith has said for some of these guys who are facing more, you know, short-termish injuries, which, you know, Kyle Pitts could be if he's able to heal up quickly, you know, they're typically more ready to come back into action really quickly than somebody who's been out 2 or 3 months. I'm thinking of a guy like Casey Hayward. It might be harder for him to kind of reintegrate if he is physically ready after a surgery that he's had. So I think the option is still open. I think a lot of it will depend on whether this team is still has the potential to make the playoffs or not by the time he would potentially be ready. But yeah, I think they're keeping all options open on that point. And so we'll just kind of wait and see what happens with him.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to your latest reporting and follow you on Twitter at Joe Patrick. Joe, I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks guys. Thanks for having me on.
Joe Patrick covers the Falcons for us at Flowery Branch. And of course, down at the stadium, he is our lead Falcons reporter, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Our soccer expert is Jason.
Ooh, we got beef. We got beef about the. Hey, it's about to go down, John Freaky.
Really?
Yeah, it's something happened. Oof. I don't think Abe's safe in this here studio. I think Jason Longshore might roll up on him.
All right, we'll see. Jason can also play mediator in the debate about whether or not, that was one of the questions we'll ask our soccer expert about whether or not the players become superstars should they make or win the World Cup final. All right, we'll do that in a moment on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
As the kids say, it's going to get real up in here.
Back to more John and Hugh.
Here we go on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This is a Jason Longshore Report, brought to you by the Georgia Lottery. Today could be the day.
Morning Show with John and Hugh. Jason Longshore, soccer analyst for Atlanta United and for us, and a host of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, which will it'll be interesting to see what Atlanta Soccer Tonight's got after the Netherlands game, as the Dutch, who are ranked higher than the United States, will be the foe on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning our time in the round of 16. And Jason joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Hey, Jason.
Jason.
What's up, y'all?
So Jason, for the sake of me not getting or misconstruing what Abe said, I'm going to have Abe explain to you exactly what he said this morning about this U.S. men's team and basically saying that they're going to be irrelevant after this match.
That's definitely placing words. That's leading the witness, Your Honor. No, I just said that if they were theoretically to go on and win the World Cup, not even just this match, I'm talking about the whole thing, I think their stars would shine incredibly bright for a time, but I think it will fade faster than people expect. That's all. Among non-soccer people. Obviously, their legends will be told in soccer circles, but among non-soccer people.
And then, Jason, my argument is I think they become American superstars forever.
If they go on and win the World Cup, absolutely. I'm with you, John. I think the difference between like your general Olympic sports, because I'm guessing that's probably where the comparison came from, is, you know, an Olympic sport where somebody becomes a hero for a short period of time, but then they fade because there's not a regular league for them to play in, or there's not regular opportunities for them to be on your TV screen. I think the big difference with this U.S. team being so young, they're going to be here for 4 more years for sure when we host a World Cup. And we saw what happened in 94 when the soccer infrastructure in this country was nothing like it is now. And you had people getting into that public consciousness. Alexi Lalas was everywhere. And yeah, some of it was down to his hair and his goatee, but he was everywhere during that tournament. Did it fade? Well, he's doing pretty well for himself, actually. So I think it's something that if they win a World Cup, which the U.S. has never done, you're going to have a different level of fame for that group, and it will cross over. And, you know, it's going to cross over for a long period of time, in my opinion, because soccer is so much higher up in the consciousness than your other more like Olympic sports that just don't have that opportunity for those people to be out in front of the public as much.
Christian Pulisic, the last time I saw him, Jason, he was in the bed talking about he was going to play and all this other stuff. I don't know. If he doesn't play, what does that mean for the U.S. men's team?
If he doesn't play, it hurts because he's the player that every opponent in this tournament has to respect. He's the one who made the huge move to Chelsea. And we can argue that, you know, should he have gone to a club like Chelsea where he wasn't going to be guaranteed as much playing time? Sure. I would have liked to have seen him get a loan move last summer to where he would have been playing a little bit more coming into this tournament. But he's been great in this tournament. No problems with his play. And you saw how important he was yesterday on a couple different fronts. He is the most dangerous player that they have. He's the one who opens up space for others. Can you win without him? Yeah, you can get it done. It's different, though. You're going to have to maybe do it in a different way. If it's Brendan Aaronson, if it's Gio Reyna, whoever comes on for Pulisic isn't going to get as much respect from the opponent. They're going to have to earn that during their time on the pitch. And I think Pulisic's just the one that in that open space, and you saw it on the goal where his quickness, his awareness, he attacked the space. He's so good at that, and I don't think you have a direct replacement. All the accounts so far are that he is going to be able to play on Saturday. We have to wait and see, but he's critical. And the other thing about yesterday, Hugh, that I think you have to give him a ton of credit for, and it actually played out as the game went on. I haven't seen this talked about very much. You only get three substitution windows. Mm-hmm. You can make five substitutions in total, but you only get three windows to do it. If the U.S. had had to burn a window to sub him out before halftime, because halftime you can make subs, it doesn't count in the windows. If they had had to use that window, you wouldn't have been able to make the defensive substitutions that they did late. You would have had to change everything up. Mm-hmm. By getting back on the field, and you could tell how much he was laboring, he could hardly run around, but he got back on the field and got the team to halftime. That's leadership. That's guts, man. That's tough to do.
I'm talking with Jason Longshore, so let's talk about it here. The United States did not give up a run-of-play goal in the group stage. I don't know if that's the first time they've ever done that. I'm guessing it is. I mean, there may not be any other team in this tournament that does that. I don't know. That defense with Tyler Adams kind of controlling the middle of the field and what you saw Walker Zimmerman and Matt Turner has been pretty stout, even without Miles Robinson, that defense. But how do we score, Jason? How do we score?
It's tough. These teams are good at this level. They're really good. The U.S. is creating chances. You're in about the middle of the pack in the tournament in terms of shot-created actions. You're very high up and getting touches in the final third. They're getting into those positions. They're not putting the shots away consistently. They're getting into those positions better than the Netherlands is. The biggest difference is the Netherlands have a player in Cody Gakpo who is scoring goals. He's got three in the tournament. He's scored the opening goal in every game so far for the Dutch in this tournament. Outside of him, their attack is far worse than the U.S., but all about finding the back of the net. I'm curious to see how Greg Berhalter handles this because this is where the games are different now. You get into the knockout round, the games are different. Of course, you'd love to go out and score three goals in the first 15 minutes and make this a much more comfortable day. But you also got to look at this game potentially going 120 minutes. You got to look at extra time. You got to think about the big picture here. And that defense is something you can bank on in this tournament because they've delivered. The back-to-back clean sheets is the first time the U.S. has done that in the World Cup since 1930. You can bank on that. If the offense is going to be slow coming, you might have to play what you've been doing, be ready to ride this out and be ready to use your substitutions to change the game late in it.
There has been a lot of consternation from soccer fans about Haji Wright, about Sargent, and even Jordan Morris, and the lack of playing time compared to that of Gio Reyna. Are you one of those?
No. Look, this is what we do. We're doing it with the Falcons about quarterback, and we've done it about the Falcons for quarterback for years. There's always somebody on the bench that would fix everything, right? If you bring that person in, and everything magically goes away, and you win every game, and there's no worries anymore. It's not real life. We all know that, right? I think the decision with Gio Reyna has been the one that's gotten maybe the online soccer crowd going the most. But Tim Weah has been the better solution, and it came down to Weah and Reyna. I think, you know, we've kind of wanted to ignore that fact in the conversation, but Tim Weah scored the opening goal. Tim Weah worked his tail off yesterday off the ball, and Tim Weah gives you different things than Gio Reyna does. And I think Greg Berhalter knows coming into the tournament that, hey, we're not scoring a ton of goals right now. Tim Weah gives you speed. He can get in behind. Tim Weah gives you, I think, more defensive ability as well. The games have lent themselves to Tim Weah. That doesn't mean Gio Reyna can't potentially play a big role in this tournament, coming off the bench in a game where you've got to go get a goal. They haven't been in that situation yet. Haji Wright, I think Josh Sargent has been the better option up top, and I'm actually really worried about Sargent's injury from yesterday. Thought maybe he hyperextended his knee the way he came down. It was really awkward the way he landed. He was another one who a lot of the off-the-ball work yesterday was so important. This team is playing well. I mean, we can have the conversation about we'd like to win games 3-0 all day long. But to get out of the group, a very tough group, the toughest group according to the FIFA rankings coming into the tournament, to get out of the group, to get to the knockout round as the youngest starting lineup in every single game they've played, the three youngest lineups in this tournament are the U.S. three lineups. To do that is a credit to what Greg Berhalter's done with this team, and it's a credit to these players. And if you got to find a way to grind these games out when the goals aren't coming, that's the job you have to do, because the U.S. can beat the Netherlands on Saturday. And you start looking ahead down the line after that, you're getting into uncharted territory for the U.S. soccer program. And it's just a really exciting place to be.
Jason, appreciate your insight. Atlanta soccer tonight, Saturday night, correct?
Oh, we're every night. We're on tonight after the Hawks. Okay. We're talking all the games all over the tournament. If you're not able to catch it live, you know, we're late night, so if you got to go to sleep, I understand. You can subscribe to the Off the Woodwork podcast, and you'll get all of the shows that we put out. If you check it from last night, you'll hear from Brad Kazan. I talked to him right after the U.S. game. Great insight from Brad as he's getting ready to come back for Atlanta United next year.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, y'all.
You're the man.
Stand by. We got what a weekend it's going to be. Saturday, you're going to have the U.S. Game against the Netherlands, 10 a.m. And, of course, Saturday afternoon, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the SEC Championship game, the number one-ranked Georgia Bulldogs against LSU. What of the LSU Tigers coming off a disappointing loss to A&M? Josh Booty, former Tigers quarterback, is going to join us. We're going to get the LSU side of the story as we count down to Georgia and LSU at the SEC title game. That's coming up on the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
As the kids say, it's going to get real up in here.
Back to more John and Hugh.
Here we go on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Championship Week. Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coming up Saturday, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 4 o'clock kick between the Georgia Bulldogs and the LSU Tigers SEC Championship game, which would have meant a little bit more had LSU been eligible to possibly make it into the – it would have been interesting if LSU had beaten A&M. Where would they have been? They'd have been 5 probably, I would say. Yeah, right. Okay. Josh Booty was a star quarterback at LSU. Played professional baseball, too, Major League Baseball. And he joins us this morning to talk a little bit about this game and some of the thoughts about an LSU team under Brian Kelly that maybe overachieved a little bit this year. Hey, Josh.
Josh.
Hey, what's happening, guys? How y'all doing this morning?
Pretty good, pretty good. So was that loss to Texas A&M by LSU, was that a little bit of a look ahead in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a tough week to prepare for anybody in the SEC, and we really believe the SEC West is tough, you know, week in, week out. And even the, you know, when you got to play teams on the other side of the division, everything matters. It's like, you know, when Georgia went to Missouri this year, I was up there for that ball game and it could have got hairy, you know, at the end and didn't. Georgia was able to pull it off. But, you know, you got to show up every week with an unbelievable attitude. And I know Brian Kelly mentioned some things about, you know, you got to play with the identity. You got to play with speed, physicality, toughness, you know, week in, week out. And I think, you know, that's what Georgia's been able to do the last several seasons. I think LSU's trying to get there, but we're trending up as a whole. You know, A&M's not a bad ball club. They played a lot of people close. They hadn't had much offense this year. And then, you know, last week they find a little offense. And That quarterback, Connor Weigman's a good buddy of mine. I trained him. He's a good kid. And he just got hot early, and LSU got in a hole and couldn't get out of it. So, yeah, it was a tough loss for the Tigers. But, you know, I think a lot of it was probably them looking forward to getting to Atlanta and kind of overlooking A&M, and you can't do that. We're too young right now and inexperienced, especially on the offensive line, to not play well early in ball games because it can get you beat.
Josh Booty joining us, getting the Tigers side of the SEC title game. Quickly here, Josh, any update on Jaden Daniels? Is he going to be good to go?
Yeah, but I think he's going to be good to go. Everybody's excited and positive about that. You know, he's going to play on Saturday, and you know, he's really what drives LSU. I mean, we go as good as he goes, and everybody knows he's super athletic. He's had some fantastic games, especially in some of the bigger ball games that we've played, and we hope he can show up and do the same against Georgia. LSU's going to need him and going to need him to be playing at a very, very high level. He's going to have to make all the plays, and you know, they're not going to be able to make many mistakes in this game to even stay close. So we're excited about him, being healthy enough to go.
How disruptive can Harold Perkins be?
You know, he's a disruptive dude. I mean, we've got some dudes now. I mean, we got athletes. It's just, you know, we're young in a lot of areas, and as good as Harold is, he's still a 19-year-old freshman, and we know he can make all the difference in the world in some ball games, and he did it against Arkansas. We saw that. He single-handedly probably won us that game and kept us in this race, to Atlanta. You know, he's a fantastic kid. He's like he's like a young Micah Parsons, who is an all-everything player, all-pro for the Cowboys. He can just do it all. He can rush. He can cover. He can tackle. He moves. He's shifty. You cannot hardly block him because he can get around you so quickly. And he just does some dynamic things. I mean, I think he's one of the best players in college football at 19 years old. And we've been able to see him come on of late. Early on, he wasn't a real player for us just because he was so young and had to learn the defensive the play calling and stuff. So now he can play free and play athletic, and that's who he is.
Talking with Josh Booty, former LSU star quarterback, as he joins John and Hugh on Sports Radio 90 in the game ahead of the SEC championship game between the Dogs and the Bayou Bengals here. Josh, you mentioned, you know, kind of a roller coaster year, big highs and a couple of big lows. Did you think at the beginning of the year with a brand new coach, granted he's really good, and a transfer in quarterback, granted he's really good, that you would be sitting here talking about LSU in the title game this year?
No, you know, I would have bet my house on Bama just because of Bryce Young and, you know, the transfer portal and getting the running back Jahmyr Gibbs. And I just thought Alabama had it all, and they weren't able to get the ball to the receivers enough during the course of the year, I think, to do exactly what they wanted to do on offense and to open things up for themselves. And so here comes, you know, Bama into Tiger Stadium. LSU played really its best game of the season, utilizing really all of its players. We got some big plays early. We got our receivers in tune in the pass game, and Jaden played miraculously. So, yeah, I think we're a little bit ahead of schedule. Like I said, we're trending up as a whole. We got the huge win at home against Bama. Probably the most frustrating loss was the Florida State game, to be honest. The first one in New Orleans, because we were favorites in our home state, in the Superdome, and took one on the chin. And Florida State's a good football club, and they played some great games this year and had some success as well. Norvell's doing a great job. But I didn't know we were going to be in this game this early. I'm excited for the team and for the players. And I think BK is a great game day coach. He's football smart, IQ guy. And he's translating that into the week in, week out stuff and into the players' mental capacity. I think that was probably the biggest thing is getting the way that he coaches across to the players. And I think that's what makes a great coach. It's what Saban does, Kirby does, Lincoln Riley does, Ryan Day does, Harbaugh does, all the big guys, Dabo, they get the guys ready to play week in, week out, no matter what. You got to show up and play your style of ball, and I think that's what we're starting to do. And I think Brian's going to bring that.
Josh Booty, we got you're a TV radio guy. You got a little less than a minute here. How does LSU win this game, Josh?
Well, we've got to make plays on the perimeter. We've got to get our receivers involved so that Georgia has to cover the whole field. I think, you know, if we limit ourselves, and we've done that at times where we're not throwing on time, or we don't have great protection, or, you know, we don't get the wide receivers involved. We got great players at those skill positions and even great tight ends. So we've got to get the ball to the perimeter. We've got to get the ball down the field, spread the field a little bit, and make some catches and some down-the-field plays. We're going to have to do that to play with Georgia.
Thank you, Josh. Do appreciate your time, and thanks much.
Thank you.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Josh Booty, former LSU star quarterback. That's the LSU side of the story, and, of course, we'll have Aaron Murray give us the Georgia side of the story coming up tomorrow on the show and get his thoughts about Georgia as a heavy favorite to win this game Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Hey, Rusty's in the house today, right?
Yes, he is. I see him in there.
Rusty Manziel's hiding. Stay good, Rusty. Top of the hour on Sports Radio 92 on the Game and the Odyssey app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.